Last week we had an incident of something that pervades the whole New Testament, namely when Jesus had this little colloquy with Peter about who people thought he was. And you remember Peter said, "You're the Messiah." And then Peter and Jesus, after that passage that we read last Sunday, had this big brawl about whether Jesus should die or not, and Peter got very angry and rebuked, the Greek is very strong, rebuked Jesus. And so Jesus in turn rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan." Because his understanding of what messianic role was very different than Jesus's. And today, buried in this little text of Matthew, we have another instance of the same thing. Who is this man? How do we understand this man? The only title that most scholars believe that Jesus applied to himself was simply the Son of Man, which just means I'm a human being, period. That was a standard Jewish way of talking about himself. I'm a son of every mother's son. You know, that would be kind of a modern version of it. But then by the time Matthew came to write his gospel, a couple generations after Jesus' death, this had developed. So we get other titles for Jesus. Jesus was a martyr. A witness to truth. Or Jesus was one of the prophets, a spokesperson for God. But here in this, we have yet a further development of that notion of the proximity to Jesus and the Father, and that Jesus, when Matthew puts in his mouth, "Come to me, all you who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, I will give you rest, take my yoke." That's a direct quotation from one of the wisdom books of the Hebrew Bible. The book of Ecclesiasticus. What's going on here? Jesus did not say these words, but this was a way of Matthew trying to make sense of who Jesus was, and speaks of Jesus as the wisdom of God. Jesus as the wisdom of God. I find this developed even in Paul a little bit, and the Gospel of John takes it full bore when he has at the beginning, you know, "Through me all things were made, and without me nothing was made." That too is directly from the book of Proverbs. So what they wanted to say is that God created the world wisely. And then they would personify the wisdom of God as Lady Wisdom, interestingly. She was always female. So Jesus is supposed to be, in his own humanity, what God intended in creating, this wise creation. And further, that will develop to, 300 years later, to the identification of Jesus and the Father in the doctrine of the Trinity. So what has that to do with us? Well, that's all very interesting, I guess, in a kind of abstract, academic way. But you'll notice, this wisdom is contrasted with the wisdom of the world. "I thank you, Father, that you've not given this wisdom to the so-called adults, but to the little kids." And then this line, "Take my yoke upon me, and you will find rest for your souls. I'm humble and gentle in heart." That's not the way the world works. Can't get ahead in this world being humble. So what we have, I think, one of the implications of seeing Jesus as the wisdom of God is what we see over and over in the Bible, that this is counterintuitive, countercultural, counter all kinds of stuff of business as usual. The standard notion, I think, of being a good human being is being a professional success. I think that's the way we, if you just think of the word success, you mean somebody has a good job, they're bringing down good money, they can, you know, outfit their family and their lives with all the luxuries for which we take for granted. And that's wisdom too. I think that's our version of wisdom. And what is being said here is something, I think, drastically opposed to that. Namely, that we are human, we are fully human only to the extent that we share what we have with everybody who doesn't have anything. More and more I am convinced of that, I think, and I don't think that's some kind of weird effect of growing old and having my brain cells die little by little. If you look at the world in which we live, if you look at the standard of lives that we enjoy here in Canada, it's Croesus, the famous Greek king. Croesus would envy us, you know, because we have so much stuff. We have so much stuff. So what does it mean to be wise in this world? I deeply believe that it means that we have to somehow disencumber ourselves, first of all, of our ambitions, to gather as much stuff around ourselves as we can, and then to seek ardently every connective line that we can make between ourselves and the two-thirds of the world who have nothing like what I have, at least. But to do that, not because there's some kind of foreign imposition, okay, project, sell all your African art, get rid of your book, you know. No, it is, if I want to be wise, if I want to be truly wise, if I want to live the life that I believe that God has intended in creating me in the first place, then I must ask these serious and haunting and often enough disturbing questions of myself as to what I want and why I want it and what I'm going to do to get what I want.